Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 12th. I'm Ray Graff. One of our all-time favorite guests is in the studio today. None other than bird expert Rich Guthrie. Rich Guthrie is here about once a month or so to answer your question about birds. Today, I think we'll have him answer questions about plumbing. What do you think? No?
We can go there.
You want to try? No, let's not do. Let's do birds instead.
Don't tell them where you might end up.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Always a popular show when Rich is on. Winter, spring, summer, fall. There's always a bird question out there. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and birds coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds on the program today, and when we do that, we welcome back our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie. Rich is here to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premium birding site, eBird. Our number to call if you have a birding question, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back. Happy holidays, sir.
Hey, good to be here.
You know, the birds, they don't take a break. Some of them leave town, but there are plenty sticking around.
They got to go day to day, day to day, day to day.
Now, the Christmas bird count is coming up, and I wonder why, since some species get out of Dodge and are not here, do they do the count in the dead of winter?
Oh, well, first, it started with tradition. It just happened to be around Christmas, a tradition that goes back to the Victorian era on Christmas Day. And the practice back then was after the after dinner, or perhaps before, I can't recall exactly. The guys, the folks at the farm would go out on a competition shoot. And the game was to shoot as many different things as they could. Birds, animals, wildlife, and come back and sort of score their tally.
Ah.
And the one with the biggest pile wins. And it was really... And some other people came up with the idea, it'd be, you know, kind of leave them alone. And
let them live.
Let them live. Yeah, nice Christmas. Hello. And and just sort of count them instead.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll just go by the numbers of birds that we have seen. And we'll exchange notes. We'll compare results. And we'll have a little friendly competition from year to year and see what happens. That was over 100 years ago. And It's held on ever since. We sort of got away from the Christmas Day routine and expanded into a period around Christmas.
And the rules have changed in the last 100 years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, times have changed. Rules have evolved. They set up more or less some standards along the way. Instead of just randomly going out, you go out in a fixed area and you can team up with others and combine your count totals so that you can compete with other count areas. So they set up a set of rules. It has to be midnight to midnight. Everything seen or heard during that day counts, and stay within a 15-mile diameter circle.
How do you enforce a rule that says it has to be midnight to midnight? What if you have a cheater?
Well, the rules, the game is not really to win, but to have a good time.
But some people like to win.
Some people like to win, and there's, you know, if they're going to bend the rules a little bit in their favor, one way or the other, that's the way it goes. Mm-hmm. But most the folks that I've seen go out on these counts stick to the rules because they know, first of all, that it's important. To be
Why
accurate.
Is it important?
Well, because here's where it becomes really significant. Over the course of these 120 years, the comparative data has become a valuable tool in measuring the ebb and flow of health of the environment as measured through the populations and distribution of birds. So it's become a very, happy accident over the course of time. And here we have this valuable deep mine of data that now people are researching and extracting information and using it for all sorts of levels of understanding.
Has the increase of the popularity of eBird, which is more or less a real-time 24/7 way to count birds, has that lessened the importance of the Christmas bird count?
Yes and no. Yes, it has, because, as you say, we have real-time 24/7 data coming and going and being utilized. But what we don't have in that is the 120-some-odd years of data to compare with. We can use it as a measure and look at it back and forth. And certainly people who are out on the Christmas bird counts generally contribute that data to eBird. So it goes into that mix as well. So what it does is becomes a combined tool.
All right, Rich Guthrie, we will talk much more about the bird count as the program wears on. But first of all, before we begin with the questions from the phones, how do people find out and get involved with the bird count?
Oh, easily. It's they can go to the National Audubon Society website, audubon.org, and you can scroll down and you can come up with a map.
Oh, look at that!
It looks like the craters of the moon with so many
little
dimples
circles.
And circles.
Yeah.
This is generally a map. What I'm holding up is a map of what looks like the general listening area at WAMC.
It's upside down, but no one can see that on the radio. There you go.
Oh, yeah, no wonder.
Now it looks, sounds better.
Canada's to the north,
there,
yes.
There you are, sir.
So anyway, you can see that there's many, 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 many circles. You can contact, if you go to the Audubon website and look up Get Involved, the Christmas Bird Counts, you can locate a circle at or near you. And tap on that circle, and it will give you the contact information for the organizer, compiler. And if you're in the circle, wahoo, good. And if not, I'm sure it's not a long distance from where you are.
You can't create your own circle?
No.
Why?
Well, because they want to keep it somewhat organized. No, they want to cut down on overlapping circles, and they want to have a genuine effort out there. One person does not do justice to the potential. And they don't want to dilute or erode the value of the information going into it.
Now, you mentioned that you can go in with several people in any particular, it's not a grid square, but a circle.
A circle, 15-mile diameter circle.
How do you keep, how do I say, statistically, how would you weed out the doubles? In other words, if I'm at point A in the circle, Rich is at point B in the circle, we both count the same bird, how do you account for that?
Well, there are ways to do that. Number one is you don't overlap groups within the circle. In other words, you stay on your side of the road, we'll stay on my side of the road.
And what if a bird goes across the road?
Well, then the chances are that the two groups will not see it.
Okay.
I mean, one may see it, and the chances are it will be hidden in the bushes
all
on the
right,
other
fair
side.
Enough.
Some of the conspicuous birds, like eagles, for example, there is a meticulous tabulation. They ask you to locate when and where, what time you saw it, was an adult or an immature. Whether it was it flying, was it perched, and then they try to weed out as best they can. But even so, duplicates are a measure in themselves. As you try to avoid it, but if you see that there are 10 eagles on a particular count in over the course of 5 years, and then all of a sudden you're seeing 15 and 20, duplicates aside, you know there's a bump in the population.
And you're one of the proctors or the vetters of the information after the fact, or you were?
I was. I used to run the Catskill, New York Christmas bird count for some 20 years or so, and I've turned that over to Larry Fetterman, who's retired from National Audubon Society. He does a superb job of rounding up the cats to put them out there to count birds.
All right, Rich Guthrie is our guest, and Rich, we'll go right to the phones here. There's one email that came in prior to the program beginning, and this is from Lou. Do cardinals pair for life, and do they stay as a pair in the non-mating season? Why is it so hard to see or identify female cardinals in the winter?
Well, the answer to the first question is no.
No?
No. They don't. They may associate with one another through the course of their lifespan, but the likelihood is that the one pair will not be the same pair.
So an amicable divorce.
Well, yeah, it's sort of like party time.
Well, all right.
And they come and go as they will.
Okay.
It may be by chance that it's the same pair from 1 year to the next, but the likelihood is it will be a different pair.
All right. And then the second question, why is it so hard to see or identify female cardinals in the winter?
They're not as bright red as the males, so they blend in well with the brown leafless shrubbery of the countryside. But the males stand right out. Oh, yeah, equal numbers, maybe 51%.
All right, that's nicely done. Let's grab a call here before the first break. Dave in Saugerties. Dave, you're on.
Hello. Let me start out by saying how much I enjoy this program.
Well, thank you.
I have a question about goldfinches. I have a brother in Eastern Shore of Maryland, and he's got a bird feeder out. We have a bird feeder out, and we talk about our goldfinches. And we have them on our feeder all winter long. And reading the Audubon Field Guide, it sounds like they're supposed to migrate away. And he doesn't have any goldfinches in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And so are there different populations of goldfinches, or am I misunderstanding something, or what do goldfinches do in the winter?
Well, it's a good question, and it's one that's really kind of hard to answer because they sort of all look alike. And especially in the winter when the males and females are especially similar looking. But the answer is that we have an influx of goldfinches in our area, in the AMC listening area, that come in from elsewhere, from Canada, from Kansas, from northwest Saskatchewan. They come down for the winter, turn around, and go back home. Some of our goldfinches stay put. They'll stay right through the winter and go nowhere. Others will hot-foot it south. And we know this from tagging, putting readable, identifiable bands on the legs of birds, and they carry them with them, and we've tracked them by trailing their numbers. So the answer is yes, some do, and no, some don't. Now, going down as far as Maryland, I'm sure that some of our goldfinches make it as far down as Maryland, in fact, beyond. But the majority of them are more northerly in the mid-Atlantic states.
Dave, thanks for the call. We have to take a break here. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Birds, the topic. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. If you want to give Rich Guthrie, the bird guy, a call, 800-348-2551, and we'll jump right back to the phones. We have a stack of emails here,
but
we'll take a few calls before we get to these. And you have something to mention.
Oh, yeah, a couple of things.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, well, here we go.
You're burning daylight, Daddy-O. Go.
I just want to bring up the possibility, the suggestion for some seasonal gift giving.
Okay.
And number one on my list would be, if for a friend or a kid, membership in a local Audubon or local bird club or natural history society. That's a gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
Or a subscription to one of their publications, or a membership in a local library or museum centerpiece.
Yeah.
The other thing is keep an eye out. This is a time of year when rare birds show up in the backyard.
Like
we
what?
Want to hear about. Let me tell you. For example, the green-tailed towhee.
I'm sorry?
Green-tailed towhee.
I knew her.
Look that one up. The golden crown sparrow. These are on my list of, wow.
Yeah.
Look for them and let me know. Or lesser goldfinch. We talking about goldfinches?
Yeah.
Here's the lesser. You got to look through. Oh,
what
those
do you mean the lesser?
It's a different species. We have the American goldfinch. We have the Lawrence's goldfinch. We have the lesser goldfinch.
You know, in public radio, we don't make value judgments. I think you should rename the lesser goldfinch.
I'm with you there. Okay. You find one. We'll call it the greater goldfinch.
All right.
The best ever goldfinch.
All right, fine.
And then one other thing, a couple of things. First day at Five Rivers Environmental Education Center, New Year's Day. Good way to start the year.
With a hangover.
Well, it's up to you, but sure. It's a good cure. And then I'd like to also mention that I'm thinking of coming up with a trip, a nice, exciting adventure elsewhere.
Nice.
Springtime in Patagonia.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
Patagonia.
On the bottom side of the horizon.
I got to say, that's a pretty, I mean, how about, you know, springtime in Rensselaer or something a little closer?
We could do that, too. But anyway, interested in, does that intrigue anybody? feel free. Give me a contact. Let me know.
What is your email address?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
All right.
And see if we can put this thing together.
That's very interesting, Rich. You never cease to amaze me. All right, back to the phones we go. Let's go to John in Oneonta. John, you're on.
Hi. My question was originally about the Christmas birth count.
Yeah.
But I have another question. I read online that if you have trouble with squirrels, you should mix cayenne pepper with the seeds so that the squirrels won't eat it, but the birds can't eat it. Well, they can eat it because they can't taste the hotness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I question that because even though they may not taste it, it may cause irritation to their digestive tract. I was wondering.
Okay, that's a fair question.
My concern is more actually with the soft tissue around the eyes. If they should ever get powdered cayenne pepper,
yeah.
Some sprinkled or sprayed into the eye, I would. And from what I've heard, that's sort of like maybe it works, maybe it doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of these things that the mixed reviews.
It's not something you would recommend, though. Rich.
I don't do it. No.
Okay.
No.
All right, John.
Find another way of keeping the squirrels out. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Do birds, like their dinosaur ancestors, eat stones from time to time?
Yes, birds need grit. That's why you'll see birds alongside the highway, especially when the fields and are snow-covered. They'll come down to pick up grit along the highway, the sand and salt that's put down there. Makes them very vulnerable because they don't have a good sense of the speed of oncoming cars. I always make it a point. If I see birds on the road, I toot my horn. Beep, beep. That gets startles and makes them fly, and then out of the way.
All right, or just drive a very old, out-of-tune vehicle. That's my my way of doing it. They're so noisy that you can hear them a mile away.
Oh, yes, right, okay.
All right, let's go to Margaret in Easton. Margaret, you're on.
Thank you. I put out the winter feeders, the suet and the woodpecker food and all that, and I'm not getting any birds yet. How long does it take till they find me again?
Well, I don't know. I'm surprised that the chickadees and the nuthatches and the downy woodpeckers haven't discovered you yet. But they will. It's just a matter of time because they're always on the lookout. And in Easton, up there in Washington County, we got plenty of winter birds up there. So I'm just saying, stay put.
Okay.
I see them come. I've been throwing out bread and muffins that we don't eat and, you know, just throwing them out the window. And I have seen them looking on the ground and pecking at those. But the suet feeder that I have hanging outside of a double window, they're not, and that was the same hook that I put the hummingbird feeder on, and that was a big success.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, you know, the suet, they usually are flocking to that, but not yet.
Not yet, and I think the yet is the key word there. You may try relocating it if you have a branch someplace nearby away from the window. Mm-hmm. That might do it.
Okay.
Get them to learn that it's there.
All right, Margaret, thanks for the call. Over to Rebecca in Kingston. Rebecca.
Hi. I was sitting in my car just a couple of hours ago, and I listened to the radio, so I hadn't gotten out yet, and this little green bird, tiny, came and started trying to attack my car.
Ow.
It was pecking at the windows and following the gaskets around them. I've got photographs of it, and it looks like a painted bunting.
Well, that would be very interesting for sure. Take my email address, send me a copy of that picture, and I will get back to you. And I will also let our friends down there with the John Burroughs Natural History Society there in Kingston, New York, give them a heads up.
Would that be a rarity?
Oh, definitely. The painted bunting, the male is an
female.
Yes.
Well, this was a female.
Yeah, I understand. The male is exquisite. The female, not quite so. But she has an important job to do, and that is to not be exquisite, not to be conspicuous. So
she was adorable.
Oh yeah, they're you know, a green bird is unusual in nature, so it's there is a certain plus in that.
Mm.
But the painted bunting is definitely a bird that you want to.
Oh, beautiful!
Yeah, the male is just it's a nonpareil bird. It's a just a it's a technicolor bird, but the
but they're rare around here.
Oh, very definitely. They're a southern bird, Georgia, Florida type bird. But
how would it end up here?
It happens. Painted buntings, every now and then one of them will turn wrong way and head north instead of south. They can survive. If you got bird feeders out, they will help themselves.
Even in a cold winter?
Birds can be quite adaptable.
Okay.
And given enough nourishment and shelter, they can, many birds can survive through a cold winter up here.
All right, Rebecca, once again, Rich, your email?
Richard P. Guthrie, P as in Peter, G-U-T-H-R-I-E, at gmail.com.
Well, sounds like a good sighting, Rebecca. Thanks for the call.
That's why I love them.
Great, I'll send it right over.
Appreciate it.
Okay, over to Jack in Olive Bridge. Hello, Jack.
Hi, Ray. How you doing? Hi, Rick. Rich. Listen, first of all, you said there's not too much green in birds. You haven't been in the tropics lately. There are thousands of green birds down there.
Rules are different down there. I agree with you.
My question is about, I heard that it's illegal in the state of New York to feed wild animals, mainly deer and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But people feed birds all the time. Do you know what the exact situation is on that?
Nope. I know it's illegal to feed deer, and there's good reason for that.
And raccoons and other things like that.
And bears and the like, yeah. As far as I know, there is no regulation about feeding birds, except perhaps when it comes to the bear season, when the bears are out roaming, then it would be prohibited to, in fact, bad judgment. To put out bird feeders where the bears might be attracted to your backyard.
Mm.
And that makes good sense to me. But as far as winter feeding of birds is concerned, not so. I mean, you could go to Department of Environmental Conservation run education centers, and you'll see bird feeders out there.
Okay.
So.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
All right, Jack, thanks for the call. It's now time for Shana in Pittsfield. Shana, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Oh, hi, guys. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a bird feeder up on my window. It's one of the clear ones that has suction cups, and it goes, you know, right directly onto the window. And for years, I've had no problems getting tons of birds there. In the last couple of weeks in particular, I noticed that they were eating nonstop, and they were always there. I got rid of my old bird feeder and got a new one, the exact same model, and put it up. And since that time, we haven't had a single bird. And I'm wondering if that might have something to do with the bird feeder itself or if there's something else going on.
I doubt it's anything else going on. The evidence seems to point right towards the bird feeder itself. Do you still have the old one? Can you put it side by side and see if it makes a difference there? And, you know, if there was a preference, and if there is, then I would take the new one and contact the manufacturer and say, what's going on here? Perhaps there was a change in the chemical formulation of the plastic, or who knows?
Oh, that's a good experiment.
A good experiment, yes. Go ahead.
I'll try that. Have you heard of off-gassing? I mean, have you ever seen this before?
No, especially... Especially if it's identical in all other aspects to the one that you had before. So that. And let me know. You got my email address? Let me know. Let me see plus or minus go or no go.
That's great. Well, Shana, thanks for that one. Very interesting call. Randy in Pittsfield. Randy.
Hey, maybe I have enough information for an ID. Maybe not.
Okay.
A little bird showed up, looked like a nuthatch, but it also looked like a chipping sparrow. It had the eyebrows.
Uh-huh.
It definitely had a nuthatch shape.
Yep.
And dropped off the feeder and haven't seen it since.
Okay, he's got his book out.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
It doesn't help on the radio, but I can tell you he's looking through his Stokes field guide here.
Field guide to the birds of Eastern North America or something
like that.
Stand by,
Randy. We'll just
right.
Whistle
as
here
I'm
while
thumbing
he's...
through.
Good radio.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm going to...
We look for our books. We can find one, but...
All right, here we go.
I'm going to point you in the direction of the nuthatch.
Okay.
As you suspected, but it's going to be the red-breasted nuthatch.
Red-breasted
nuthatch. And I'm going to hold the picture up to Ray.
Oh, yeah, that's always helpful.
Yeah.
Let me see.
And he's going to show the bird with a stripe through the eye like the chipping sparrow.
I don't see any red breast on that thing at all. On the right there?
Oh, the guy over here.
Oh.
Right there.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's, that's tan.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I didn't name it. You know.
All right, Rich.
But
you don't have to be defensive.
No, I just want to set it straight there. But we got try the red-breasted nuthatch there as a possibility.
All right.
And
is that a common bird around here?
It's one of these winter birds that come down, actually, in the Pittsfield area of Massachusetts. Pretty good likely that they nest somewhere nearby, over there at Pleasant Valley Nature Sanctuary by the Mass Audubon Society.
Yep.
They probably nest right in there in those higher elevations. So I would suggest red-breasted nuthatch.
Okay, Randy, thanks a lot. All right, one more call, and then we'll take a few emails, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the home stretch. Kevin and Colony, you're next.
Yeah, hi, Ray and Rich. I just want to say, I've noticed in the Times Union, there's been a couple sightings of eagles close to one on Wilkins Avenue. I'm on Grounds Place near Grandma's Pies. And then there was another one just above us on near the Colony High School. That's a good sign, isn't it?
Absolutely.
There's more of them?
Yep. And here's a story. That's one of our happy success stories with the environment. With the ban on the poisons that were killing the eagles off.
Dioxin and what?
Dioxins, DDTs. And with my colleagues at the Department of Environmental Conservation who pulled this magnificent stunt, and that is to bring the eagles back to New York and copycat it around the Northeast, all up and down the East Coast. The result is that we now have a very healthy eagle population to the point where it keeps growing and expanding, that they're now occupying marginal habitats. The good spots are all taken. So you'll see them.
So they moved to Colony. Oh, that's a terrible thing to say, Rich. Jeepers, creepers.
They had to go to the high rent district. They had to go to the high rent district.
The ruffled graff.
Yeah.
The Ray Graff, you know.
Well, Kevin, thank you for the call.
Good for you, Kevin. Thank
you. A couple of quick emails here, Rich, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll do a couple more emails, and then we'll hit the phones again at 800-348-2551. This one's from Mark. Okay. Mark writes, penguins seem to naturally live only where it's cold. How are they able to survive in sub-zero temperatures and in turn live comfortably inside warm weather zoos?
I think, adaptable. Some of the penguins are found in warmer climates. They're not all standing on the Antarctic continent. Some of them are in South Africa, South America, at the Galapagos Islands. So I think the ones that you may see in the zoos are more likely the ones that are from the more temperate zones. Okay. And then also, they have refrigerators. They keep that temperature inside those enclosures comfortable, cool for the penguins to be at ease.
All right. And then, okay. Also, Mark wants to know if you're related to Arlo or Woody Guthrie.
Well.
Or any famous Guthries.
I am.
Are you really?
To me and my brothers.
Okay. This one is from Queensbury Bird Lover. I caught a red squirrel at my feeder several times lately. I noisily opened the window, don't laugh, growled. Now my usual variety of birds seem to have gone away. I'm hoping they're just finding plenty of food since we have very little snow cover and that my imitation of a dog hasn't frightened the birds. What do you think?
Nah.
No?
Nah. Probably scared your neighbors, but it didn't. I don't think the birds, they're used to that. They hear dogs and coyotes and wolves and bears.
All right. This one is from Jonathan in East Chatham. I have feeders on a tree outside my kitchen window. I've noticed over the years, flocking birds like red-winged blackbirds and grackles find the feeders early in the morning and descend en masse. Bluebirds, on the contrary, seem to be solitary birds, but always show up en masse at my feeders, probably a dozen or so every morning at the same time. Any ideas why this occurs?
Birds have a routine, and that's a good observation. What you're seeing there is these guys making the rounds. First of all, they're going to wake up very hungry, so they're going to go find a reliable place for food.
Yeah.
Your backyard, your feeders. And then they're going to get up and move around and see, you know, window shopping elsewhere, see if the neighbor's got a better feeder going or whatever. And they'll come back. They do, you know, just a regular circuit of the neighborhood, so to speak. Some of them, you know, love it there and they ain't moving.
All right. Then the second question is there a theory about why some birds flock together and others go solo?
Security in numbers. Some birds are gregarious, others are not. And that's all within the genetic code the orders of the species.
All right, last email question before our break, and then we'll do a couple of more. This one is from Erica in the Berkshires. What's the westernmost documented pair of breeding loons in Massachusetts?
Most, I would say right
westernmost.
There. Westernmost. Westernmost. Berkshire County, I'm sure. That over the course of time, if you're talking historic records, I wouldn't be surprised that they were nesting at the Berkshire Bowl.
Okay.
Or the Stockbridge Bowl, rather, or Richmond Pond. Any of those natural water bodies.
She says
over time.
In spring, she sees some individuals in ponds in the Berkshires, but they never stick around. Do you know of any pairs breeding in Massachusetts west of the Quabbin?
I don't off the top of my head, but here's a hint. Go to eBird and look up the distribution, the range map of common loon, and then narrow it down to the breeding season, June, July, August.
Do you have the URL for eBird?
eBird.org.
eBird.org. Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, and we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. I'm Ray Graff. Rich Guthrie is our guest today, and it's birds on the program. And Rich, two emails, and then we will get to as many calls as we can. We really need a couple of hours to do this program.
Okay. Well,
we only have one.
Bring them on.
All right. And if we go too long, Brian Shields gets upset. He has Northeast Report at 3:30, and
he can wait.
He gets a little cranky if you cut into his airtime. This one's from Michelle. And Michelle writes, there seems to be lots of vegetation, seeds, grasses still in evidence all around. We still put out our bird feeder containing black sunflower seeds as well as suet. We're surprised at how much food the birds are consuming and eating right now. They are literally eating and attacking nonstop throughout the day. Does this mean the rains this summer inhibited seed and food availability? It's a
no.
long question.
Yeah. And
short answer, long question.
The answer, no.
Okay.
They like what you have, and they're going to take full advantage of the offering while it's there.
All right. So. And then Michelle from Phoenicia follows up with, are they acting in a territorial manner to position themselves for winter?
Yes.
Okay.
For the most part. They're staking their claim, but the gregarious birds will have to share the room with others.
All right. James writes, I live in Smallwood, New York, which gets a lot of snow every winter. I'd like to put up a bird feeder, but I have read that feeders attract the white-footed mouse, which is perhaps the main vector for ticks that carry dangerous microbes. Is there a way to feed birds in a winter time that won't also attract mice who may stick around in the summer? And that's from James in Smallwood.
Whether you feed them or not, the mice will be there. Mice are sort of omnipresent.
Mm.
And what I like is I feed the birds. And the other night I went out, turned the light on, and there was an owl sitting on my bird feeder.
Nah.
So he was just waiting for those white-footed mice to show up at the bottom of the bird feeder.
So you hope for owls.
I'm all for owls.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. And Brian in New York. Brian, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. As a bird lover, one of the things that really surprised me is the amount of birds that are killed by domestic cats and feral cats, too. I've recently heard about, perhaps you can comment on this, is that people are taking brightly colored cloth and putting it around their cat's collars, and it takes advantage of the bird's natural ability to detect bright colors. And it seems to dramatically decrease that effect. And I was wondering if you'd heard about that. I know that there are companies out there that sell them, too. But perhaps you'd comment on that, and I will hang up and listen to your answer.
Thanks a lot. So brightly colored cloth on collars.
Yeah. And, in fact, what a coincidence. I had just come across that same or similar information as well. And I really, from what I've read, the studies that have been done at the universities, both here and over in Europe, are that it seems to be working.
Huh.
The cats do kill birds. There is no getting around that. Pet cats, house cats, roaming cats, feral cats, cat colonies, TNR, they kill birds.
Okay.
And they've taken a terrible, terrible toll. It ain't fair. So this cat collar, this collar that people have put on a cat, it's a... There's one out there that I've heard of. It's called Birds Be Safe.
Yeah.
A website that you can look it up and learn more about it yourself. And from what I gather, these things are made with the type of colors that birds can readily see. and doesn't affect the movement of the cat. Oh. It's a breakaway collar, so there's, you know, some of these concerns about collars that it will catch on something and the poor cat will suffer.
Yeah.
These are breakaway collars, so that I endorse anything, especially keep the darn cats indoors and none of these cat colonies. But a cat collar like this could be an answer that goes right down the middle.
All right, Rich Guthrie, our guest. Jane in Livingston Manor is next. Jane.
Hi.
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 Hi. I'm calling about suet recipes. Mm-hmm. The suet cakes that I've had the most luck with are the very expensive big round ones.
Mm-hmm.
Like that come in the soup container.
Mm, delicious.
But to pay $20 for one thing is a lot of money for me. The recipes that I've seen online mostly call for some sort of beef or chicken lard or rendered fat, which I haven't been able to find in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
Well, it is out there. I found many of these chain markets will have raw suet, which is what I buy. When I see it, I buy it.
In what department?
In the meat department, over in the frozen, at some places it's in the fresh meat department. You can ask the butcher. I used to go, used to be able to get fresh suet free. It was something that they had, it was a byproduct that they had no particular use for. Now, the darn supermarket chains are starting to charge $2.50 a pound for it.
Oh, boy.
I know. But in any event, when I see it, I buy it. And I look for a lower price, and I try to get fresh beef suet. And with that, you can render that down, mix it with seeds, and form it into cakes or balls or muffins and put them out there, and the birds will love you for it. Or you can just put it into a mesh sock, something like what the onions come in, a mesh container,
mm-hmm.
and just tie that up on a tree, and they'll love that. They'll love you for that, with or without the seeds.
Okay.
Good
right.
luck.
Jane, thank you for the call. Over to Sue in Cambridge. Hello, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just want to put a plug in for the Christmas bird counts. I've been doing them for about 40 years, but I've been organizing the Salem count for the last 15 or 20. I also participate in the Johnstown Gloversville count, and this year it will be December 23rd, and we're short about four or five people.
Okay.
So if anybody in the audience wants to count birds, even if they don't know much, they can be the tally person.
Oh, wonderful.
I just invite them along. It's my favorite day of the year by far.
There you go.
We always have incredible sightings no matter what.
So is there a site where they can find the information to contact the compiler?
I'm not sure, but I'll give them my email, and I can pass that along. So it's SUE. VANHOOK, Sue Van Hook at Gmail.
Okay, Sue. Hey, thanks a lot, and good luck with the count. Our number is 800-348-2555.
Or an individual can go to the Audubon Society webpage and look for that count in that particular circle, and there will be the contact information as well.
Brilliant. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. Sally in Durham. Sally, you're on. Hello, Sally.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Yes, I have a question, an observation and curiosity about owls.
Mm-hmm.
The last three weekends in a row, I've seen a barred owl in our yard during the day, which mm-hmm. I think is pretty unusual. And I'm just wondering, you know, if it's the same owl, which I suspect that it is. I'm suspecting that they're territorial. And why I'm seeing him during the day. At one point, he was on top of my mailbox, and I just walked out there and he stared at me, and I talked to him a little bit about my cat, and he let me take a quick picture of him.
All right. Well, the barred owl, B-A-R-R-E-D, the barred owl, gets its name because it has these vermiculations horizontally across the breast. It looks like barring.
Mm-hmm.
The barred owl is the one of the owls that is prone to be seen during the daylight hours, especially in winter. They're not, and I suspect that this is, and the others, with this behavior, are ones that come down from the north. They do migrate slightly, a little bit. They mm-hmm. come down from the north. And up there, you know, it's daylight for a long time. And they better get out there even day or night. So I think they're accustomed to being out in the day, and they're not that wary of people because they up there, you know, they see moose and and the bears and the like, and it's not a big problem, you know. So I think they're not spooky, they're not afraid, and they are daytime. So the barred owl is one that it quite often can be seen during the day.
So this one was probably migratory, and he would not be here then during the summer?
Hard to tell. Okay. But I suspect, my suspicion is that this one is a Canadian visitor.
Just as an aside, for years I lived in Wisconsin, and one winter, we had a snowy owl mm-hmm. the whole winter. That was wonderful to see on phone poles, and he was there for months.
And they too will be out during the daylight hours. So it goes with the territory, and they bring it with them.
Sally, thank you for the call. Rich Guthrie, our guest, and Sally Ann in Averill Park is next. Sally Ann.
Hi. Who knew there were so many Sallys? I'm so glad to hear your voices when I turned on my radio this afternoon. Just quickly referring to the cayenne pepper business.
Yes.
I tried it years ago. I found no evidence of harm to the birds, mm-hmm. but I did discover that some of the squirrels eventually developed my taste for hot pepper.
Wonderful.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
So they didn't care for it. I have now resolved the situation mostly by just sucking it in and buying the expensive spinning perch bird feeder, which is about 98% effective. Every once in a while I have a squirrel who just sticks and doesn't care, and he waits until the battery runs out.
Little rascals.
Well, thanks, Sally.
But that's what they do. I also keep mine very high. Actually, this is good for people with bears, too. I keep mine suspended from lines, and they're very high off the ground. I access them with a series of pulleys and lines.
Sally Ann, you are clever.
I can get easy access to them, to fill them. And the bears can't reach them, and it's wonderful on the first day of bear season. I tend to take them down because I don't want them to be tempted, but I keep my suet feeders up high, and it's a wonderful system. I'm sure people, clever bird feeders out there, can figure out how to do that.
Well, very clever, very prudent. Good for you.
Thanks, Sally Ann. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie is our guest today on the program.
At gmail.com.
Thank you. Caroline in Summit, you're next.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Sure thing.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. I've lived in Summit for 35 years, and the first 10 years we had the evening grosbeaks come every winter, and all of a sudden they stopped coming for about 25 years, and this is the first year that we've had like 20 to 30 grosbeaks back, the evening grosbeaks.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I was wondering why all of a sudden they're coming back again.
Well, it's a good question. We don't know the answer completely, but it happens. These periodic incursions of birds, such as the evening grosbeak, they're very conspicuous when they do it. But other birds follow patterns similar to that. The red pole or the pine grosbeak or the crossbills or even the goldfinches. These northern birds that come down, it's all about the food. The evening grosbeaks, this has been a banner year so far for evening grosbeaks. It's been 30 years so since they've been around. And now, even in my little backyard, evening grosbeaks have visited. And I love them. They're great big golden, yellow,
birds.
And black. And
yeah, they're very, very pretty. Big birds, too, like almost like parrots.
They are. And
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I have one other question about, you talked about the lesser goldfinch before, and I thought that the goldfinch that are coming to the bird feeders now are just not as bright yellow as the summer goldfinch. I thought that was the only reason. I didn't think they were a different type of bird.
Well, you're right about that. It's the same old American goldfinch, and I don't want to diminish the value, my appreciation of them. However, the lesser goldfinch is a bird of a different species altogether. They're all found out west. And there has never been one seen or recorded in New York, at least documented. But, you know, we birders, our quest is to find something new and fun and different. So there we go.
And one other thing, I just want to say thank you for telling us about the barred owl, because we have them here, and they are just beautiful birds.
They are.
Caroline, thanks so much for the call here today. We go to Pam in Montgomery. Pam.
Hello.
Hello.
Rich, thanks for taking... Hi, thank you for taking my call. I live in the rolling hills of the Berkshires, and I wanted to tell you about the bird-watching high of my life when, on October 29th, I had in my backyard for 3 hours a golden eagle.
In your backyard?
In my backyard. My backyard, I have a lot of land, and it slopes down to the north branch of the Westfield River, and this bird sat high in the maple tree and occasionally would just do a circle around the pastures and come back. I have never seen a golden eagle, and it was the thrill of my life.
Well, it would be for me as well. Now, first of all, you've got to be sure that it was a golden eagle, because a young bald eagle will look pretty similar to that. In fact, as an eBird reviewer,
yeah,
I get several reports of golden eagles, and I have to look at them, scrutinize them carefully, because the bald eagle, we like them too, but the golden eagle is much rarer. And I would suspect if you have a large area like that, the golden eagle, has probably found some sort of food down there. And I would maybe a deer carcass or some other critter that it's simply hoarding and guarding.
That could be. And I have spoken with you before, and we have one common denominator. I feed the vultures like you do. And I did have some chicken parts out there, but he never came down, he or she, never came down, but just seemed happy to hang out and preen, and it was indeed a golden. When I first saw it, I thought immediately an immature eagle, because it had no white head and kind of white splotches on its tail. And it just didn't look right. But then when the sun came out and I saw those golden feathers around it.
What I'm going to suggest is pictures.
Okay.
And
I took them.
Good.
Yeah.
Email them. RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. I'd love to see them and verify it.
All right, Pam, thanks a lot. Now, we only have about 45 seconds here, Rich. Let's quickly go to Jay in Huntington. Jay, you have about 15 seconds to make the question.
Ruffed grouse, sometimes known as partridge. Haven't seen them in 30 years. I live in the eastern Berkshires in Huntington, Mass., right near Montgomery. Used to see them. I live up high in the hills. Used to see them quite frequently.
Well, I'm going to say
30 years. What happened?
I don't know. The coyotes, turkeys, and changes in environment are the three factors that probably led to the decline in rough grouse.
Okay. Jay, thanks a lot. We'll have to leave it there. I apologize to everybody else on the line. Rich Guthrie is a very popular guest here. Once again, your email address, sir?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. And did I say pheasants? I meant turkey. Instead of coyotes, turkeys, and changes in the environment.
All right, 10-4, good buddy. All right, hey, Rich, great job today. Have a great holiday. We'll see you in the new year.
Happy New Year.
And support comes from Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the film In Our Own Hands, The Hidden Story of His Majesty's Jewish Brigade in World War II, Sunday, December 16th at 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai. Discussion and dessert reception to follow, 518-584-8730. Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in search engine optimization and internet marketing since 1996, mannixmarketing.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. And George Heigel Antiques, Ballston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses, 518-396-7974. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for joining us today. Thank you for listening. As always, great questions. We appreciate them, whether they were by phone or via email. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. The phones were answered by Jesse King. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Gordon Fricke is back in the studio to field your automotive questions. So write them down now and join us tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for news.